Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and Emily Bazelon, senior editor and legal from Slate, is here. She cannot believe the jokes, yes, jokes, that were coming into her inbox in response to the NSA surveillance leaks rather than the outrage that she is feeling. So let's talk about that and the secret surveillance catch-22 that she writes about. And we'll listen to some more clips from the Edward Snowden Guardian newspaper whistleblower video. Hi, Emily. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So what were some of those jokes?
You know, lots of people are saying, hey, NSA, you can listen to any phone call you want. Mine are incredibly boring. Like, here's what I had for breakfast this morning. And look, I think some of this is like a natural defensive mechanism. But I also think we can't lose sight here of just how much of a surveillance state has been revealed.
I like the one about how your friend will agree to have Verizon monitor his calls in exchange for lower rates.
Exactly. You know, give me the snooping plan. I just don't want to pay as much for it.
So I'm going to play a 40-second clip from the Edward Snowden interview, the NSA whistleblower who outed himself yesterday, unusually and amazingly, in an interview with Glenn Greenwald at The Guardian. Here is 40 seconds of him saying why we should care about metadata surveillance.
Because even if you're not doing anything wrong, you're being watched and recorded. And the storage capability of these systems increases every year consistently by orders of magnitude. To where it's getting to the point you don't have to have done anything wrong. You simply have to eventually fall under suspicion from somebody, even by a wrong call. And then they can use the system to go back in time and scrutinize every decision you've ever made, every friend you've ever discussed something with, and attack you on that basis to sort of derive suspicion from an innocent life and paint anyone in the context of a wrongdoer.
So there's one of the reasons why Edward Snowden leaked those documents and went public with it. Emily, is it the same thing for you that has you feeling so strongly about this? Is it that, well, all those phone call data points are just sitting there if the government ever decides to look into the life of Emily Bazelon, even though chances are if you didn't do anything wrong, they never will?
Also, the revelations about PRISM, the government's the National Security Agency's program for monitoring and reading email and other online communications. I mean, we are just talking about creating very large capabilities for vacuuming up data about people. And then you can say, like, okay, I've never done anything wrong. The government can collect all the information it wants on me. Look, my life is spread all over the internet anyway, and the internet companies knew. But, you know, in the past, when we have given the government broad capabilities like that, eventually government agents misuse this power in some way. And I don't see why we have to wait for that other shoe to drop in some huge way to be worried about how clandestine and how widespread this data gathering is.
And listeners, keep this conversation going. This is obviously the American conversation right now and over the last few days and probably over at least the next few days. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Steve on the Upper West Side, also unhappy. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I'd like to offer a little bit of the outrage that she felt was missing from her email box. We have been attacked by terrorists and others numerous times, most notably on 9/11. And they have always tried to undermine our democracy and take us down, and they never succeeded. They always failed. However, we come along, and we do the job for them. We undermine our Constitution. We dismantle key components of it. And we are causing damage to our democracy that they never were able to do. In a sense, they win. And we are allowing that. We are actually creating that.
And, Steve, what do you say to some on the other side, and there are many in both parties, as you know, who would say, well, they're not going to take down our democracy, but unless you do stuff like this, they're going to kill a lot more people. And they even point to one of these programs. I guess there's disagreement about this, but some of the folks in Washington point to the alleged plot by Najibullah Zazi to bomb New York City subways in 2009, foiled in part through information gathered from one of these programs?
I think that if our law enforcement agencies and our intelligence agencies cannot handle this job within the confines of the Constitution, as we have for 250-plus years, I think that there's something terribly, terribly wrong internally.
Steve, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Emily, what about that for you? Does it give you pause with respect to your own position to think, well, you know, maybe somebody I know would have gotten blown up on the C train if they didn't have this program a couple of years ago?
I certainly recognize that there's always a balancing act here. What I find really difficult right now is evaluating the trade-offs that the government has struck because, you know, the people who are read in on this in the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, they are saying essentially, trust us. We had a good reason to set up these programs, and we're using them responsibly. But we know from past history that there are always examples of abuse. And, you know, in this case, the fact that a 29-year-old computer program named Edward Snowden, who was a government contractor working for Booz Hamilton, had access to all of this information and could become the incredibly powerful whistleblower that he now is. That in itself is a reason to wonder about the decisions the government is making.
You wrote about a kind of catch-22 where the Supreme Court rejected a suit based on the NSA secret spying or challenging the NSA secret spying because the plaintiffs couldn't prove they were spied on because the program was secret. Nice circular reasoning there by the justices.
Yes, you know, this is always a problem for the courts. We have this rule called the state secrets privilege, where essentially when the government says something is a state secret and so we can't have a public lawsuit about this, we can't even have a lawsuit where the judge reviews all the documents inside his own chambers. Courts generally defer to the government on those state secrets claims, even though the original state secrets case from the 40s, we now know, was all about protecting the government from embarrassment. It was brought by, you know, a guy who had been in a plane crash. He wanted to find out what had gone wrong. It was a government plane, and the government was at fault, and they didn't want to reveal it. That's the genesis of our state secrets privilege, and one imagines that there are many other instances in which the government uses this to defend itself against things that are embarrassing, but things that the public should know about.
Angela in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Angela.
Hi. While I share some of the outrage, a lot of the outrage that people are expressing about this, what I object to in all the news coverage I've seen is calling this young man who released this information to The Guardian a whistleblower, as if he uncovered something that we already didn't know about or should have known about. The Patriots Act, under which all of this activity is taking place, was passed after 9/11, when there was a huge worry about terrorism, and that act was passed by Congress. There was only one objection, that was Russ Feingold, to the original Patriots Act. Russ Feingold was the only one who objected, and he objected for the very reason that people are discussing now, only nobody paid attention. It was renewed in 2005. It's been renewed yet again. So people are now expressing outrage who weren't paying attention before. So I think it's healthy to have these discussions, but I would be willing to bet that if the American public in general were given the opportunity once again to vote in some fashion over whether we should take the chance on the government missing one phone call or one email that might catch a so-called terrorist, as opposed to giving up the freedoms that we've given up by allowing this to happen,
then people would probably support.
I absolutely think so, because we've been so we've been made to fear in a way that I think is unreasonable.
Angela, thank you so much. And, you know, Emily, this is the second call we've gotten today saying, well, whistleblower is really too kind a word, because that's supposed to mean somebody who leaks some kind of wrongdoing or announces some kind of wrongdoing. This is kind of a policy disagreement. And so is he really a whistleblower? And, you know, and the president keeps using this same argument, some of what Angela was saying, that This is something that has the approval of all three branches of government, debated and passed by Congress, obviously executed by the president, and signed off on by the Supreme Court.
Well, the president is right in terms of his legal argument. He appears to have the upper hand here that laws were not broken. So if you think whistleblowers only are whistleblowers if they reveal illegal acts, I suppose that's not the word you'd use. I would argue for a broader definition. I think what's really important about what Snowden revealed is the incredible reach, the specifics of this phone record data gathering and also internet-related gathering.
And by the way,
we're
going to run out of time in about 30 seconds, but because you follow the law, a whistleblower has protections under the law. There are whistleblower protection acts. So technically, legally, you don't think he can invoke that, do you, to prevent prosecution?
I think that will be hard for him. I think he will be vulnerable, and that's why he has fled to Hong Kong. I don't think the government should go after him, though.
And we will find out if they do and how they do, and this conversation will continue to unfold. Emily Bazelon, senior editor for Slate, who watches the courts and other things and is also on their weekly political podcast, which we air here on WNYC. Thank you very much for talking about it with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You can also see the link to the full video of Edward Snowden on our site. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and keep the conversation going.